Come On To You Show, Friday, September 28th. We're going to make you some money. Mox on a Friday. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Find us online, TheMontyShow.com. And, of course, anywhere that Brett Kavanaugh gets his podcast, you too can do that without an FBI background check, I mind you. Did that work there, Jake?
Oh, it did. It did.
Absolutely,
yes,
it did,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, wherever you get your podcast. Cubs won today, Jake.
Yeah.
My boy Ryan in San Diego.
Well, now the Cubs are the best team in baseball, and, you know, they've got the best pitchers, the best pitching staff.
You forgot
Chris
ever.
And Bryant went deep.
You forgot ever. Short Sheet said on Twitter, only 13 minutes complaining about the Cubs demonstrates your restraint. That's right. The other day, I did complain for 13 consecutive minutes.
You know,
that was it.
I'd just like to say, when you have people tweeting to you about your level of complaining, the amount of minutes you spend complaining, you know that's a loyal listener.
And then he said, then goes 5 more minutes. So it was 18 minutes. Whatever. We exchanged some memes. It was fine. Don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Cubs won today, 8-4. Kyle Hendricks, Cy Young Award winner.
He's still going to lose the division. Brewers are a better team. Christian Yelich is MVP.
Well, you know, it is an interesting discussion, and we'll get to locks in a minute. We're talking Cubs baseball. Settle down. Anyway, point is, Javi Baez is a pretty good MVP candidate. I mean, the one thing that, without question, Christian Yelich has the advantage in, I think, is that his pitching staff is not nearly as good as Baez. Has been, anyway. I mean, you have a 19-game winner in John Lester now? So you have a guy, Baez has guys. Their offense, no. The Cubs' offense has been crappy most of the year. But then, of course, people will point out the runs per game number that is phenomenal. But, you know, what does that mean when you're getting swept by Pittsburgh or splitting a series? It just felt like a sweep.
Same thing.
Anyway, the point is, I think they're going to go down to the wire. Whoever has a better weekend probably wins the MVP, would be my guess.
I mean, I think Javi Baez is the MVP. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think Yelich he plays for the Brewers, therefore he can't be the MVP. I think Javi Baez is the MVP.
He's disqualified.
I don't even think it's close. And again, I've just been saying for the last, 6 weeks that the Cubs are going to win the division by less than 2 games, and they're going to go out in the first round.
Why does his employment with the Brewers impact?
Because I just think I don't know. I just don't like it. It just doesn't feel like it doesn't.
Well, nobody.
It doesn't feel
there are
good,
no
dude,
Brewers fans.
Yeah.
There are Cub fans who live in Milwaukee that go and see
Cubs
Brewers
North.
Games.
Yeah.
So there are no actual physical human beings that
are
Brewers
fans. Just paint the
Brewers
sly blue, man.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go.
Well, you know, again, not to bring up Brett Kavanaugh repeatedly on the show, but he admitted that he drinks a lot of beer, so he must be from Milwaukee, which is why he can't be on the Supreme Court because no good human beings come from Milwaukee. We all know that.
Did he have a lot of beer in his system while he was standing in line? Oh, sorry. My
Take
bad.
It easy.
Sorry.
How about that thing today? Real quick, not because, you know, we don't talk politics
Uncle
on this
Monty
show,
on
but
Kavanaugh.
Like, you know, once a day. The point is, how about the Brett Kavanaugh thing today? Donald Trump actually did something that is pro-woman, which again tells you that he is a heavy cocaine user because he did something for women, which means he's out of his freaking mind.
But how can you be out of your mind if you were already out of your mind?
Good point. Anyway, the point is, I don't know. In all seriousness, Donald Trump acquiesced today.
Big word for you.
Acquiesced today. We used our thesaurus, which would actually not be a thesaurus to look up a big word. It'd be a dictionary, which is to say I'd look on Google because nobody actually has
iPhone
a dictionary.
10.
iPhone 10X, big one. Anyway, the point is.
Look, Don, take it easy. Look, Mario Kart.
This is the worst 4 minutes of Dutard we've ever done. Anyway, the point is, Donald Trump agreed to an FBI investigation that, frankly, he's going to control. And if you didn't hear it, Jeff Flake said, I'm going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh, who apparently drank a lot of beer and kept calendars as a kid. Because I know when I was in eighth grade, I kept a calendar of all of my activities. I went through Crayolas like nobody's business. Anyway, the point is, Flake said he was going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh. And then he got on the elevator and this woman just went ape
lit
on him. She was talking about how she had been sexually assaulted and you're this and you're that. And you're telling me it's okay how I was treated. So he gets off the elevator, walks back into the Judiciary Committee chamber, and looks like he has just seen the ghost of whoever, and probably the, you know, anyway, I'll stop. He walks back into the chamber, visibly upset, sits down, makes a statement, gets back up, walks into a meeting room off the side, and starts talking to all the Democrats. Comes back out and says, yeah, I'm going to vote to send this to the floor, but I will not vote to confirm him on the floor until the FBI investigates. And of course, Jeff Flake, who's retiring because, well, he sucks as a senator, has essentially said that he's a Democrat because he hates Donald Trump, and that might be why he's doing this, but it's just interesting that he did this, and he's the swing vote on Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, now they're not going to have a vote for at least a week.
Huh.
When they were going to send it to the floor today and vote on it tomorrow.
Yeah, just push that through.
Yeah.
Push it through. Yeah, it's amazing, no worries.
And I know that I've said a number of things that may make you think that I don't like that idiot Donald Trump, but today he was actually quite presidential. Which is to say that he didn't have on an oversized tie and a jacket that were 30 times too big for him.
He's a healthy individual. So,
right,
I mean,
who
it's
eats
just
McDonald's every
thing.
Day. We get it. Yeah. His nutrition plan is...
It's
you know,
dialed in, bro.
It is what it is. Full sugar soda,
yes.
The whole nine.
Yes.
Anyway, fatty... I mean, Donald... Actually, I should stop.
I'm probably
pissing people off.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, President Donald J. Trump today... actually talked like a president and was very forgiving and complimentary of the whole process. He said nice things about Kavanaugh's victim in this case. He said really nice things about Kavanaugh because we know that Donald Trump only surrounds himself with the level best in the entire world. Remember, he drained the swamp and everything.
Right, yeah.
So the point is, he drained the swamp and found this POS Kavanaugh at the bottom with some chick. Anyway, the point is, he actually sounded presidential today.
Well, I mean, at some point, he's going to have to get one of these situations right, because if he's not grabbing them by the ha-ha and he's not sending people after Stormy,
who uses
I mean,
that kind
you know,
of language?
At some point, he's got to get one of these right. So, you know, I'm really impressed with his, you know, his you know, preparers of,
but,
you know, press conferences.
But you know what I
good.
Thought? You know what I thought was funny this week about this whole Kavanaugh thing?
Yeah.
And not much was funny. It was quite frustrating. But every time Donald Trump would talk about this Swetnick woman who made these crazy allegations, and she's represented by the guy who's never going to be president, and if you vote for Michael Avenatti to be president and I find you, I will punch you.
He's such a savage.
But the point is, Donald Trump's like, yeah, that loser, that liar, that, like, he never can just call somebody.
No.
Like, Marco Rubio was little Marco and lock her up, Hillary Clinton. And then Kavanaugh sits down at the table and he's like, oh, this is a conspiracy spearheaded by the Clintons. Lock her up. Well, he didn't say lock her up, but he did say it was a conspiracy by the Clintons, which I thought was amazing. Anyway, should we just pick games or should we keep talking about America?
The deep state,
which I think is funny, too. So. Let's pick games. Why don't we start with college football? Because,
okay.
Frankly, I've whooped ass in college football this year. 10 of 13 against the spread. We were 3-1 last week. I think this week, though, is a much more difficult week to pick.
This is a true test.
It really is. And, you know, just looking at these games, there's historical numbers, matchups, metrics. Like, there's no game that is easy to look at and say, oh, yeah, this team's going to win. So why don't we start with number 20 BYU at number 11 Washington, Husky Stadium, Seattle, Washington. 5:30 kickoff, 73 and partly cloudy. Weather will not be a factor. The Washington Huskies are a 16.5-point favorite. The number is 46. A couple of things to consider. BYU is 5-0 against the spread on the road in their last five games. 10-3 against the spread in their last 13 road games. And Washington is 1-4 against the spread in their last five, which tells you BYU usually makes Las Vegas very happy, and we know that that's a good thing because those that believe Joseph Smith is amazing love Las Vegas. So go to Vegas and bet BYU this weekend because I actually think BYU's got a real shot to cover this 16.5. If you look at Washington, they've gone under 17 of their last 24 home games. That's because their offense isn't good. And I know that a lot of people love Jake Browning, but I think Jake has struggled, and he has struggled mightily against some good teams. Now, oddly enough, his best game came last week against Arizona State in what was a thrilling game that most people who watched that game agree with me that Arizona State probably should have won that game.
Yep.
But they didn't. I think Washington is a vulnerable football team. I think Washington is another one of these teams that if you play smart football and you allow Jake Browning to stand back there and throw the football and you force him to win the game, you're probably in pretty good shape. But here's the problem. I don't know that BYU can score enough points to actually win the game. That's what my biggest concern in this game is. I love BYU on the road, but you want to talk about history? There's also some metrics of historic nature. In the last 40 years, only six teams have won two games where they are 17-point underdogs or more. They've only won two games in the same season. Let's dial that in a notch. There's only been one team in that time period who's done it twice on the road. Well, you might remember that little game in Wisconsin where BYU was a 23.5-point dog and won. So it would be amazing. It would be BYU would be historic if they beat Washington, if they won outright and beat Washington Saturday. It'd be history, which is why I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to go against the grain on this one, and I'm drinking the juice. I think BYU's got a big time shot in this one. I think we the whole week last week we were talking about how Wisconsin's size is going to dominate. BYU's not going to be in the game. Like they said no to all of that, and they dismissed all of that, and we were wrong about that game. And I think we will be wrong about this game if we say that Washington is going to just go out and dominate BYU and suffocate BYU. I think BYU's defense will determine this game one way or the other. I think it's less about the offense and more about the defense. And what I mean by that is if Jake Browning is completing at a high percentage, he's not doing it with deep shots. So if BYU can keep everything in front of them.
Which they're very good at.
And so if they can keep everything in front of them, I think they're going to be fine. Now, the key X factor to watch for me is if they hit Browning. If they can sack him 3-4 times in this game, I think they've got a great shot. But in order to win the game, they've got to have defensive points one way or the other.
They've
got to
turn him over.
One way or the other, you've got to score. And I would love to see a pick six in this game for BYU. But I think at the end of the day, I'm going to take BYU 21-17. I think they're going to shock it. And I think it's going to be a great game.
How? Washington's got 10 straight home wins over the last 2 years. They're winning home games by 28 points a game.
That might be true.
Let me say that again. They've won 10 straight home games in 24 months, and they've won by an average of 28 points in those games.
Mm-hmm.
That's the margin of victory. I don't see any way that BYU goes in there and wins. Frankly, Ben Berkervin is just too damn good of a football player to allow BYU. I don't know that BYU scores a touchdown in this game. That's how good Washington's defense is at home. I think BYU covers. I think Washington wins 24-9. They win, they cover, and it goes under. I think BYU will cover. I don't think they would. You're crazy. Don't go to Vegas and bet. I'm begging you.
I'm not a better, but I'm also not
if
somebody.
If I were a betting man,
listen,
and I'm not
going to write a team off who went to Camp Randall and won the game.
I'm not telling you to write them off.
Well, you're telling me that they're going to lose this game, and I'm not saying you're wrong about that or off your chair or anything. I mean, that's the realistic pick, but I'm just saying don't be surprised if BYU surprises us in this game.
I'll say this, that BYU will have a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. They've played 3 one-possession games already. BYU's going to have a chance to win this game in the fourth quarter. Sadly, they won't. And what scares me, again, Ben Berkervin in that defense love guys like Tanner Mangum. And they don't sack the quarterback a lot. That's in my opinion, I think they have 6 sacks on the year. They didn't sack Manny Wilkins at all last week against Arizona State. My point is, they don't pressure the quarterback enough to sack him. That's because they cover really well. And I think Tanner Mangum's going to have his hands full. Washington 24-9 is my prediction. Washington wins, it goes under, and BYU gets the cover. Now, one of the games of the week. Frankly, could be the game of the week.
It is the game of the week.
Notre Dame, Stanford, Notre Dame Stadium, 4:30 kickoff. Notre Dame is 4-0. They're the eighth team in the country. Stanford's 4-0. They're number seven, and Notre Dame is a five-point home favorite. 52 is the number. This is going to be a high-scoring game. 52 times 2 is probably not enough to cover the number. Both teams have defensive issues. Stanford, in particular, is 57th in the country in total defense. However, they are the sixth-best defense in the red zone, which tells you they're probably not the fastest team defensively, but they're great when you don't have a lot of space to operate. They're 120th in the country. This is a stat that'll blow your doors off. They're 120th in rushing offense in the country. Stanford, no, the Cardinal, Stanford, 120th with Bryce Love on your team, who's only got two touchdowns the entire season. He's averaging 4.3 yards a carry, is Bryce Love. I don't know how you explain that. And all I can say is that I think that Stanford's getting beat badly up front. That's what I think is happening, is Stanford is not playing well on the line.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you look at Bryce Love's stats, you know, he last year, in a year when he almost won the Heisman, he was averaging 8+ yards a carry.
Correct.
This year, he's averaging around 4 carry. So that's not Bryce Love. That's the offensive line. He's got nowhere to go. And I think that's a huge problem. But a couple of things, again, I feel like I'm Mr. Defense today, but a couple of things for Stanford's defense. You know, if they can get to the quarterback and get 4 more sacks in a game, they're doing really well. That's the number. If they can get to Ian Book 4 times in this game, they will win this game.
How about that kid?
Yeah.
How about Ian Book?
Ian Book, I mean, that's a nice inaugural performance, if you will. That's a nice opener. But I don't think that he's going to just come in here and just destroy this offense for like 400 yards. I don't see that happening.
I would think not. But when you talk about Notre Dame and you talk about Ian Book, I think it is interesting. They're getting Dexter Williams back tomorrow, their running back, who hasn't played yet this year. He's probably not going to have a huge role, but Tony Jones Jr. will do just fine. I think this all comes down to what KJ Costello's capable of doing and how that offensive line at Stanford holds up against what I think is one of the better front sevens in college football at Notre Dame. KJ Costello is number 2 in the Pac-12, 9.3 yards per attempt. I mean, that's really good.
Yes.
And this was supposed to be all about Bryce Love, and it's not. It's all about KJ Costello.
And the thing that impressed me about the Oregon performance last week was that he was so composed. He was leading that team.
That's correct.
There was no sense of, you know, scrambling or panic or any of that. He was not shook
at
all.
Great point.
You know, he was very composed, and I think
in
going
a really
to
tough
Notre Dame,
place.
Yeah,
you know? Because when you go to Autzen in Eugene, Oregon, to play the Ducks, that's a really difficult building to play in.
No question about it. And I think if you look at that winning touchdown to the tight end, that was a beautiful throw.
Yeah.
Now, the tight end had to make an all-world play, but that was a nice throw.
My point is I don't think he can do that 2 weeks in a row. I think this is a danger, letdown game for Stanford. You don't go to Eugene, then turn around and head to South Bend and think that you're going to get 2 wins out of that. Never mind that Notre Dame's got an 8-game home winning streak. They're 4-4 against the spread, by the way,
mm-hmm.
in those 8 games. And Notre Dame, I don't know that Sam Hartman's funeral has been had yet, but the Wake Forest quarterback, Sam Hartman, was hit 21 times
by
Notre Dame, and then he limped off the field, and I believe he perished in the locker room.
Yeah.
I said he perished, like they killed him.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is Notre Dame hits the quarterback, and that's why I think Notre Dame is going to score a hell of a lot of points, 42, and Stanford's going to score a hell of a lot of points, just not enough. 42-35, the Irish win, cover, and it goes over.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Stanford in this game. I think they get after it. I don't buy the Ian Book juice yet. I think if he wins this game, he legitimizes himself. I think he came in against Wake, and, you know, yeah, you destroyed him.
I mean, completely
him.
Changed the offense.
Destroyed him, changed the offense.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was a great performance starting, but this is a real opponent this time. This is a true team.
Wake Forest isn't a real opponent?
No, I don't think they are. I don't think Wake Forest is Stanford. Stanford's legit.
Well, let's hope that KJ Costello has a burial plot. Let's move on to the whiteout game. I don't know why I said it with that voice. Ohio State, number 4 in the country, at Penn State, number 9 in the country. they're going to have over 100,000 fans at Penn State.
Epic.
And it's going to be a whiteout game, and they're always awesome. Those whiteout games at Penn State, they're always awesome. They're not as awesome if you don't win, and they haven't always translated to wins. This game here probably determines Ohio State's fate. If they lose this game, I don't think they have any shot of going to the national championship, into the playoffs. I don't. However, this, in my mind, does determine the Big Ten East. And I think Penn State is in an incredible position. They're 3.5-point home dogs. You know what the number in this game is? 70 is the number. Yes. So they're expecting a high-scoring game. And why wouldn't you, with Nick Bosa out? And TCU really has played one, or excuse me, Ohio State's played one real game, and it was TCU, who racked 511 yards against Ohio State. And a lot of that, yes, was after Bosa tore that abdominal muscle and went out. But I also think some of this has to go to the Penn State side of the conversation. Miles Sanders is the number six running back in the country, 495 yards total. He's averaging 6.9 yards a carry. Hello. Penn State's the number one offense in the country at 55.5 points a game. I think they have an average quarterback in Trace McSorley. And I think Ohio State's incredibly well-coached with the guy who supports domestic abusers, not Brett Kavanaugh. That'd be Urban Meyer. My point is, see what I did there?
That was very smooth. Worked in the Supreme Court guy, Kavanaugh. Yes.
Anyway, the point is, Urban Meyer's on the sideline for this game, and I don't think it matters. I think there's 100,000 wackos at Penn State, and they're going to win 42-38. I think Penn State wins. And obviously, they went outright, and it goes over. I love Penn State in this game.
Yeah, again, I'm just not going against the Ohio State offense. So.
And Ohio State. Can you please just and Ohio State? Where are you at with Urban Meyer? Did he lose?
He's a complete despicable dirtbag.
Okay, well, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah him and Kavanaugh hang out.
What do you think of Urban Meyer? Yeah,
you know how you said Penn State's got the number one offense? Who's second? Ohio State, 54.5 points a game.
And actually, Ohio State puts up more yards a game than Penn State does.
The factor in this game, though, one thing to look out for with Ohio State when you're watching this game, their benchmark is 40 points and 500 yards total.
Yes. Correct.
If they get to 40 points and they get to 500 yards in this game, they're probably winning the game. So if you're Penn State, you've got to keep them below that 500-yard mark. And I think the fact that we're talking about 500 yards in one game for one team tells you what kind of game this is going to be. One other thing I'd like to say is that J.K. Dobbins, one of the toughest backs to tackle in college football. And there's a reason for that. You look at his stats, he's shifty, man. He really makes you work hard to tackle him. So I think he's got to have a big game. And I think the only other thing for Ohio State is Jordan Fuller, physical defensive back. His presence will be felt.
Well, and I think you got to mention Haskins. He's got to play well if Ohio State has any chance of winning this game. But again, this is a guy that's probably never seen a stadium in an atmosphere like he's going to see at Penn State tomorrow. So I think there's a lot of that, and I think they're going to have Hill and Mack and Campbell are all going to have big games catching the football for Ohio State if they're going to win. And if they do that, hey, that's great. But there's a reason that Ohio State played Rutgers. There's a reason that Ohio State played Oregon State. There's a reason that they played Tulane, because they're getting ready for Penn State. This has been circled on their calendar. It's that kind of game.
Yes.
But it's also been circled on the calendar at Penn State. And I think James Franklin has done a wonderful job rebuilding this program after the Jerry Sandusky despicable behavior that should have meant that they never played football at Penn State ever again, but it didn't.
It's not how the world works.
I should just let that be. The point is, I think Penn State's at a real pivotal time, and everybody thought they'd fall off the face of the earth without Saquinator. Yeah, but they haven't. And that's why I think Penn State's going to win this game. And I think it's going to be 42-38. Penn State wins outright, and it goes way over the 70. In fact, it'll be 80. A couple other games you got to keep your eye on. USC at Arizona. USC's a 3-point Road favorite. That number is 59.5. Arizona's winning that game, and it's going over, in my opinion. And then Utah at Washington State. This is a huge game for the Utes offense. They've got to come out and prove that they can play, that you have a quarterback and you have a healthy running back, that you know, you have some semblance of offense.
Yeah, just any kind of threat. I mean, they didn't have anything, like nothing.
You have the number one defense in the country by a lot. And all you have to do is score 17, 21 points a game, which should be a no-brainer in college football, and you're going to win the South.
Yep.
They haven't been able to do that. And it doesn't matter to me what Washington State does offensively, because I believe that the Utah Utes are the best defense in the country. They're that good. Kyle Whittingham is just a genius defensively. The only thing that worries me is that the Utes are 1-5 against the spread when it comes to Washington State. That worries me because Utah's only a 1.5-point favorite, but I'm going to take the Utes to win that game. So there you go. Our college football winners, we got BYU covering the spread. They're going to lose, in my opinion, 24-9, but the spread's 16.5, so UW will win and go under in that game. Notre Dame, Meyer and Wee, 5-point favorites. I think they cover it 42-35. They win cover and it goes over. Ohio State, Penn State. Penn State is going to win outright because they're a 3.5-point home dog. They're going to win and it's going to go over the 70. They're going to score 80 in that game.
Okay.
Can we talk the National Football League?
First of all, before we even get into locks.
Oh, God, Jake's about, wait. This is a family show, so don't get aroused when we talk about what happened last night.
Jared Goff, bro, you are the man. Boy, you are the man. 49.5 points in fantasy last night. Now,
Jake,
are you
camping right now?
I would like to say.
Yes.
I was criticized for drafting Kirk Cousins, who found a place on my nice, warm bench last night for 37.5.
Yeah. Jake, how can you bench Kirk Cousins?
Idiot.
Because you started Jared Goff.
Juice, boy.
How many points
Get
did
it.
He score you?
49.5.
Hello!
Yeah, awesome.
It's amazing.
Fire.
And now it is that conversation. And I think a lot of fantasy owners are in this spot. You're in a PPR league as well, which is a huge difference. So quarterbacks really matter. I think you have to now begin to start Jared Goff. And I think you need to try and trade for one of his wide receivers. I think you need a Woods. I think you need
Cooper Kupp.
Well, you're not going to get Cooper Kupp. I mean, he's one of the top fantasy wide receivers in all of football. Unless you're willing to trade, you know, a Mike Evans to get him, which is defeating. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
But my point is you have to find a way to get one of those guys. And whether that's Cooks or whoever you want to point to, you need to get one of Jared Goff's receivers. And I would do that sooner than later. One of his tight ends would be good. One of his wide receivers would be great because I think he's going to hold it down all year long. They're deadly. I think Jared Goff is the entire reason that they're this dominant. If you look at what they were last year, he was a good quarterback. Now it's just dime piece after dime piece. Like he's throwing the ball 60 yards in the air and it is landing in a thimble.
Yeah.
And the other part of this is, and we're going to talk about the Patriots in a minute, but think about what Tom Brady had. He had Edelman, Amendola, Cooks. Well, he doesn't have any of those guys, and Tom Brady's not had a good season. He's looked pretty average, to be honest with you. You now fast forward to a Jared Goff, who's got weapons all over the field, including Cooks.
Yeah.
And he's able to throw fly balls into an area of the field. And the best part about what Jared Goff is doing is he's now able to use one wide receiver to get another wide receiver open. He's able to move linebackers and safeties because he's getting tight end play. He's got Cooks on the outside, which helps Woods get open down the seam. Like, that's what Tom Brady doesn't have. And Jared Goff is showing you why Mitchell Trubisky is struggling.
Yeah.
He's showing you why a guy like a Patrick Mahomes, who's got weapons and already is operating at this mental level that he understands what defenses are trying to do to him. And when we talk about the quarterback derby every Wednesday when we do our top five, bottom five in this league, why is Kirk Cousins struggling? Well, because Laquon Treadwell can't catch a cold.
Yeah.
And last night, by the way, Treadwell caught two balls that were really important late in the game.
Yep.
But then what do? They blow the game at halftime. They run the clock out instead of spiking it.
Yes.
So clock management. Everybody talks about the secondary in Minnesota. It's terrible. We've been telling you that for a month now.
Yeah.
It's not the offensive line. It's a secondary. So what did we see in the Rams last night? The Rams, without Aqib Talib, played pretty well in the secondary. Now, Kirk Cousins had some plays to Diggs, and Thielen, that touchdown that Thielen kicked you right in the nuts on that, because your guy you're playing this week.
Yeah, I was going to be up by about 45 points and that took it down to 30.
Yeah, kind of deflated the balloon. Anyway, the point is, weapons matter. Quarterbacks are better quarterbacks when they have great weapons. That's why Randy Moss, frankly, it's why everybody's waiting for Gordon in New England.
Yep.
So, there's my rant.
Thank you.
Let's get to the National Football League and our picks. The Chicago Football Club, known as the Bears, hosting the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Bears are a 3-point home favorite. I hate this game. I absolutely hate this game. In my two pick'em leagues, I changed this pick now. I had the Bears winning it. I've changed it to Tampa, and there's a couple of reasons why. Number one on the Bears, Khalil Mack is a stud. He has been a great pickup. We saw last week that the Steelers were able to routinely pound Fitzmagic. They got to the quarterback, they pressured him, and Mike Evans made the Steelers pay for that.
Yep.
Can the Bears do that same thing? My guess is yes. This front seven for the Bears is actually pretty good. And Khalil Mack has made football in Chicago fun. But the Bears' secondary is garbage. Prince Amukamara, who had actually stepped up and played pretty well, you remember the pick six to seal the Seattle game? Well, he's out. So Amukamara is not going to play in this game. Also out for the Bears, wide receiver, good old number 17, Anthony Miller out, so expect Kevin White to get some quality opportunities for the Bears for the first time in a couple of years, Kevin White. But this defense already struggles to cover. Amukamara is out, and you have guys in Tampa, as you know, in DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans. You've got Howard, the tight end. I mean, you have guys in this offense who are capable of getting open. And Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't need 5 seconds to deliver the ball. He needs 2.5.
Yep.
And I think that's why, Jake, I have to take Tampa Bay, who's getting 390 net passing yards every single game. It's the best start that Tampa's ever had offensively without the crabby Jameis Winston. Tampa 31, Chicago 24. Tampa wins, and it goes over.
Yeah, let me give you some Mike Evans greatness real quick, okay? Yeah,
Mike Evans is also on Jake's fantasy team.
Homie's had 30 targets, 23 receptions.
That's a stupid, ridiculous number.
13 yards on average.
23 of 30.
Yeah, that's incredible. Ridiculous.
That tells you he doesn't drop a lot of passes.
Yeah, so my thing is I think Fitzmagic continues, but I do think there's going to be some picks because of the Khalil Mack effect. So I have him, his stat line's going to be somewhere around 375, 4 TDs, and I think it'll be 3 interceptions because I think he's going to get hit a lot. And I think there will be some...
Who's going to intercept him?
Well, I don't think it's going to be necessarily about that secondary picking it off. I think you're going to see him get hit while he's throwing, and you're just going to have floaters, like just balls up in the air. You know, I don't think there's going to be any great
secondary
play.
By the way, Roquan Smith has looked really good. Everybody's talking about Khalil Mack. Roquan Smith, who my wife has actually changed my dog Django's name to Roquan. Now, because he's played that well and he's earned it.
Yeah.
So now I have a dog named after Ryan Sandberg and another named after Roquan Smith. It is what it is. Danny Trevathan, not Trevathan, and Roquan Smith have actually been a nice 1-2 punch at the linebacker. So you could be right. You could be right. Tampa's going to have to find a way to run the ball, by the way.
Yeah.
Which they will do. What do you got for a final score in this game?
I like it to be 31-17, Tampa.
Wow, so only 7-2. Well, and Trubisky's not great, let's be honest. He worries me. As a fan of the Chicago Bears, I sit here wearing a Bears hat, actually. I'm really worried about Mitchell.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Tampa 31, Bears 24. Tampa wins outright, and it goes over. I think one of the best games of the week, the Ravens are at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Sunday Night Football. It's a 3-point Steeler favored line at home. 50.5 is the number. Steelers are 1-4 against the spread in their last five, and their defense sucks. The Steelers' defense is 29th in total yards, 28th in pass defense. That's the Mike Tomlin's Pittsburgh yeah. Steelers are terrible defensively. Ben Roethlisberger, though, is having one of the best starts in the history of the NFL. He's got 1,140 yards. That's an average of 380 yards a game. That's the fifth best all time through 3 weeks. But I don't love this defense. I don't really know what to make of this game. And I think, and I don't even know how to say this with a straight face, Vance McDonald and Jesse James could be the determining factors in this game, because you can't tell me that the Ravens are going to let Juju, who's questionable, and AB beat them.
Yeah.
I just don't see that happening. I think a lot of blitzing's coming Ben's way, because they know he's just going to throw the ball.
Yep.
I got to think they blitz the hell out of him.
Yeah, you know, for me, if you're the Ravens against this Steelers offense, you know that the Ravens are going to play a lot of zone. That's just kind of what they do. So I think for Pittsburgh, you're going to see a lot of underneath play. You're going to see more of James Conner. You're going to see more, if Juju plays, you're going to see more crossing routes for Juju. But I think at the end of the day, the goal for the Steelers here is to work that underneath game for most of the game. And then AB is going to be unleashed. I think he gets a couple of shots in this game, and it's just a matter of whether they can connect or not. And I do think they will connect, and I do think James Conner will have another solid performance, because I was impressed last week. He made a couple of nice plays where he ran somebody over, made somebody miss, gets out of bounds, like smart football plays. So I've been impressed with him so far. I have the Steelers winning this game by 4 points, 28-24.
We talked about the Bucs. They're the team that played on Monday night. Now they're coming back around to play on Sunday. They played Monday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
Playing Sunday after Monday night football last season meant that you were only 5-11 straight up and 4-12 against the spread. That means that if you played Monday night, you weren't very good on Sunday, which is why I can't believe I'm picking both the Bucs and the Pittsburgh Steelers to win this week.
Yeah, buddy.
35-31. Pittsburgh will win. They will cover, and it will go over the 50-point number. Because if you do the math, 35-31 is 66 points. So I'm picking this to go substantially over. And the one number that stands out to me, and the reason I'm willing to do it, is that Ben Roethlisberger does not turn the football over.
Yeah.
He has thrown that ball. And again, 1,140 yards.
Stupid
he's
numbers.
Completing 66% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions, which is pretty good considering he's been sacked 8 times. I just think Ben Roethlisberger's the whole world there. 35-31, Steelers win, cover, and it goes over.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is Ben is very slippery. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, he's known for not going down much, but he's shown this year particularly, it's just been hard to sack him, and he's done so well. And so he's going to survive in this game, and I think he makes more of those plays where you almost have him until you don't, and yep. He gets another completion.
Yep, let's move to the Dolphins at the Patriots. This is the most difficult pick of the week. I you know, we look at essentially every game, and we pick usually 4 out. This was easily the most difficult NFL game for me to pick this week. The Patriots are a 6.5-point home favorite. The number is only 48.5. And the reason it's so difficult is because I mentioned that Tom Brady doesn't have Edelman, Amendola, or Cooks anymore. And you miss those guys. You have no idea what Josh Gordon's availability is because, frankly, Belichick just won't tell you.
We'll see.
We'll see. And it really kind of makes you wonder, you worry about it. And when I look at this offense, they already lost their number one running back in Rex Burkhardt. He's out for the year. So now James White very clearly is the guy that's going to handle the bulk of the load because Sonny Michel is hurt. So you don't feel good about that. I don't know who Tom Brady's going to throw the ball to. And I love Tom Terrific. But Rob Gronkowski doesn't look like the same player to me. He's still a big home run hitter. He's got 420-plus yard receptions, so they still like to get the ball down the field to him. But do you realize their number two wide receiver is James White, their running back?
Yeah, man, it's not good.
That's terrifying. And when you also figure out that Chris Hogan has only 7 receptions out of 14 targets, he's got 2 touchdowns, which I believe both of them were scored against you.
Yep.
Chris Hogan's not even had a good year.
Yeah, and I think if you just look at the Patriots' complete offensive picture, there's just not a lot of – they don't have a lot of flow right now. There's not a lot of good energy about it. It's just a lot of guys who aren't producers, and it's Tom Brady trying to get the job done. And so for them, I think, you know, this is what we always talk about. This is what we talk about with Tom all the time. Tom has the ability to get
Tommy,
it done.
Tommy, please.
Tommy has the ability to get it done. You know, when he's got nobody to help him out.
Tom, terrific.
Only this time it's not going to happen. I think he's going to struggle.
I think they're going to win because mainly I also think that Miami's going to have to rely on their crappy quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, who I'm not a fan of at all, although he's having a hell of a year, completing 73% of his passes. But here's the thing. He's only thrown the ball 74 times.
Yeah.
He's only thrown the ball 74 times for some contrast, if you will. Ben Roethlisberger, as I mentioned, historic start, he's got 1,140 yards. Ryan Tannehill's got 687 yards. And granted, he's got 7 touchdowns, but again, he's only thrown the ball 74 times.
Yeah.
And it tells you that, A, Kenyon Drake's a pretty decent running back, though he's only averaging 3.5 yards a carry. Frank Gore has actually been their most effective running back. But they have diversity in the backfield. They have weapons on offense, which is interesting. You know, Albert Wilson, Kenny Stills, Danny Amendola has actually been okay for them. The Patriots would love to have Danny Amendola.
I was going
to
say.
But I still think that Ryan Tannehill has got to show me that he can handle a big situation in a tough atmosphere like Gillette at Foxborough. So I'm going to take the Patriots 27, the Dolphins 17. The Patriots will win, they'll cover, and this will come under the 48.5.
Yeah,
this will be 44.
We agree on the Dolphins at 17, but I'm saying the Patriots are going to have 21, a little bit less.
Ooh.
I don't think they're going to score as much.
So you think the Dolphins cover this number?
I think it's a little bit closer, yeah. Just because it's less about the Dolphins and more about the fact that Tom has just nowhere to go with the ball.
Well, what are you going to do if Josh Gordon plays? Because if Josh Gordon plays, he's going up top.
And I would love to see that. Frankly, I would even go as far as to say that would be good for football if Josh Gordon came back, played, and lit the world on fire. That would be awesome. But I don't know that that's going to happen.
The fourth game that we are going to select will be the Saints at the Giants. The Saints are a 3.5-point favorite. You didn't even want to talk about this game today.
Yeah.
Which I don't really understand because I think the Saints are one of the most compelling stories in football. And then there's the New York Giants who aren't so compelling, but that's because we don't know anything about who they really are because we haven't seen their best football yet. Here's the thing about the Giants. Saquon Barkley is coming. He is actually starting to catch the ball. He's got 21 catches. He's only averaging 6.5 yards a catch. So he hasn't quite figured out run after the catch. But he's figured out that you can run pretty well in the NFL, 216 yards, and he's got 2 touchdowns. He's a big play threat. I really like what Saquon Barkley's brought to them. But I also like what Odell Beckham Jr. has brought to them. The problem is I don't know that Eli Manning can get him the ball because he's healthy. His head is in the right place, mainly because his paycheck is in the right place. And they just don't seem to get the ball down the field. It doesn't feel like there's this explosiveness. And it seems like, and maybe this because, you know, Odell has been out of good graces for so long, Sterling Shepard seems to be the preferred target of Eli Manning. And when you've committed this kind of money to Odell, I think you have an Eli problem now.
Yes.
But boy, when they're clicking, he's really good, and he's completing 74% of his passes. He's not turning the football over. 110 attempts, he's only got 1 interception, which is actually really good. But I think the Saints are elite. I think the Saints are one of those teams where it doesn't matter what you throw at them offensively, because if you blitz them and you take away the hot route, he's got somebody else to go throw the ball to in Drew Brees. And Alvin Kamara's really good.
That's what I was saying, man. Like, Saquon's really good. I get that, and he's blown things up. Kamara's right there, bro. He is absolutely right there. There's no question about it.
Certainly, Kamara is a weapon, and Drew Brees knows how to use him. But they're using a lot of different guys. I love what they're doing with Ted Ginn. I like what they're doing with Ben Watson. Frankly, I like the fact that they have gotten good production offensively, consistent production offensively.
Yeah.
Taysom Hill is all kinds of special teams. Like, he is making big plays last week. Like, I really like what the Saints are doing. I find it interesting that Drew Brees is still just humming like a Hemi. I hate Dodge. Anyway, the point is, Drew's completing 81% of his passes. He's got 8 touchdowns, and he hasn't thrown an interception yet. He's getting good protection. He's got guys. I don't think anybody realizes how good Michael Thomas is.
Yeah.
Nobody respects the guy. Again, big play guy. He's averaging 10.5 yards a catch, 3 touchdowns. They're a 3.5-point favorite. I get it. They're going to New York. I think it's a close game. I think it's going to be 165-10.
That's Saquon's going to have all 10.
Yeah. I think the Saints roll out of bed and score 28 points.
Easily.
But I feel like this should be the game where the Giants break out. The Saints can be had on defense. Now, they're going to get to the quarterback. I get that. But I think Saquon Barkley has a big game catching the football. I want to say that this is like 31-27 Saints. That's what I feel like. It's 31-27 Saints.
The only thing I have questions about is if we're talking about a shootout, I'm not going against the Saints. Not that you are, but
I just really
anytime you're talking about a shootout, I got to take the Saints. I don't think it's as close as you have it. I think the Saints score a little bit more at 34 points. I'm going to go with 34, 35 points. And I think the Giants are 21 points. Okay. I see it as a little bit more.
Well, we will find out. So our winners for you this week in the NFL, we're going to take Tampa 31-24. Tampa wins outright because the Bears are a 3-point favorite. We'll say at 46.5, that game's going to go over. Ravens at the Steelers. I've got Steelers 35-31. They cover. They win, they cover, and that goes over. Dolphins and Patriots. Pats are a 6.5-point favorite at 48.5. Pats win 27-17. And I've got the Saints beating the Giants 31-27. The Saints cover the number, but just barely.
Bada boom, bada bing. There's no other questions. You got it now. You've got the cheat sheet.
Yeah. By the way, cut me in when you're done winning, will you? Hey, before we go, you are finally on the new Joker bandwagon.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, and look, I'm not all in yet, but it's creepy.
I'm all in.
It's creepy. It's a creepy Joker. It is different than the last Joker we got, and I think Joaquin Phoenix is going to do a great job. I love the way...
Joaquin Phoenix.
I like it. I like it a lot, but I really... I don't want it to be a movie where it's like it's scary and it's getting after you. It needs to be suspenseful, and I think it will, but I don't want it to trend towards like... You know, like in horror or any of that garbage. Here we go with the sigh. What pick did you get wrong already based on the injury report?
The Bulls ever being kind of basketball team.
Come on.
Jimmy Butler traded back to the Bulls. No, I'm kidding. Lauri Markkanen, who trolled Jimmy Butler. Yeah, he's out 6 to 8 weeks, suffered a high-grade elbow sprain. Some people on Twitter are calling it a dislocation of his elbow.
Okay, he's out then
6 to 8 weeks. But my guy, Lonzo Ball, in the family.
Lonzo.
Yeah, he's cleared for contact. Anyway, the Lauri Markkanen thing. I should give up on the Bulls.
You're not a Bulls fan. You're a Lakers fan. Why don't you just own it?
I should seriously stop rooting for the Bulls.
Because number one, you like Lonzo. Number two, you're the biggest LeBron fan I know.
Let's not get carried away with Lonzo.
And number three, you know, you're a big Lakers fan. You know? Is that incorrect?
I'm a Kuz guy, first of all. He's my favorite Laker by far. I respect LeBron. I'm not a LeBron guy because Kobe's better than LeBron. And I'm actually not a Lonzo fan. Okay. As a basketball player, I actually like him. But his dad's a disgusting dirtbag who ruins guys' dreams. That's probably too much.
Okay.
Brett Kavanaugh. Anyway, the point is, who would you rather have for your dad, Brett Kavanaugh or LeVar Ball? Probably Brett Kavanaugh because he's a judge who can get you out of trouble. Anyway, stupid question. The Joker. I'm really looking forward to this. Joaquin Phoenix, as Commodus, is still one of my favorite villain characters of all time. He played a great heel. If he is as crazy in the entire movie as they're proclaiming that he is, his breakdown mentally in this movie is going to be phenomenal. I wish that I didn't have to go through, you know, the Wayne family murders again. I don't know why that has to be in every single Batman storyline, because I feel like it is, and it just doesn't need to be. But this movie focused on the Joker, and I hate this as well. I shouldn't even say it, because I think you're probably going to punch me. Phoenix has a chance to be a Joker similar to the Dark Knight. This Joker feels like that Joker.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. And I can't
that.
Think of what's his name.
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger, thank you. Joaquin Phoenix has a chance to I don't think anybody will ever surpass Heath Ledger. He has a chance to get into that box.
Yeah.
Because any of the Jokers we've seen recently have just been terrible.
Awful. I was not a fan of Jared Leto's Joker.
It was awful.
It's not my style. I'm not a DC Comics guy at all. I'm just not a fan. But I think when we talk about, like, when we compare the Jokers, for me, it's the little things.
Look at the show Gotham.
Yeah.
They don't try to be that Joker.
Yeah.
He is his own different... The guy on Gotham is his own different Joker, and I think it works very well. Because that show has, in my opinion, elite writing. You need somebody the caliber of Joaquin Phoenix to play that role.
Yeah.
And you know what he's capable of doing just because his history is amazing.
Yes.
He is just a phenomenal professional actor. And I cannot wait to see how he did in this role, how they wrote it for him, how they shot it for him, how they cut it for him, because that's what makes the role. Why is Heath Ledger so good? Because they allowed him to own that Joker character, the little nuances, his relationship with Batman, the fight scene in the interview room when, you know, he's talking about, you know, the nuances and why do I use a knife instead of a gun? The hospital scene.
Like, that's the perfect example of what you're talking about. The hospital scene where the Joker is walking out of the hospital to the school bus was not scripted. It was not even supposed to be in the movie. It just happened where he's clicking the remote and trying to figure out how to blow up the hospital.
But think about Heath Ledger with Rachel.
Yeah.
In Wayne's penthouse.
Yes.
That scene where he just darts his head around her and, is it the scars?
And if you look at the way they shot it, they do that. The next time you watch The Dark Knight, and the next time won't be the last time for me.
No.
Every time the Joker is one-on-one, whether it's Gamble, Rachel, the Batman, they're going in a circle around it so you can get, like, every angle. And that's just brilliant. Yeah. You don't notice it while you're watching it because you're in the Joker so much. But you watch that movie enough, you pay attention, it's brilliant.
And then, you know, when he's driving the semi-truck, I like this job.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff is amazing. That's what a great character is. So this Joaquin Phoenix character has that potential because Joaquin Phoenix is that caliber of actor, that caliber of performer. So if they are willing to write it, shoot it, and cut it in that vein to allow the actor to own the role, because they didn't do that with Leto.
Yeah.
If they do that with Joaquin Phoenix, and this, remember, the reason I think they will, this movie is central, focused on the Joker.
And let's be honest, Joaquin Phoenix deserves that kind of opportunity.
Oh,
he's earned that kind of an opportunity.
Well, because his performances have been amazing.
Dominant.
Yeah. His performances have been off the chart. By the way, one more thing on entertainment before we get out of here.
Okay.
I have fallen in love all over again. I dumped my wife.
Okay.
I don't know how many people know this. Like, I kicked my wife to the curb this week for all the hot chicks on Chicago PD. It's over. Like, we're no longer... My wife is just, you know... I'm kidding. My wife's a superstar. She got... Anyway, next week I'll tell the story about my wife.
Okay.
But my wife and I have been watching Chicago PD.
What about me, man?
You're always on your phone. You know, you and Lance trading videos of him working. Oh, do you lift, bro? Hey, bro, bro. Hey, bro. Look at all these plates on the leg press, bro. Whoa. Hey, man, bro. Your calves are really coming in, bro. Anyway, The point is, Chicago PD is a great show.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll let you have your moment. Yeah.
So do you realize most dudes at the gym skip leg day?
Mm-hmm.
Your friend Lance skips like chest and back and shoulder and arm day.
Yeah, he's the Joker. He
does leg
insane.
Day. Yeah, he does leg day every day. Like, dude, come on, bro. You realize you need biceps, right? Anyway, the point is, Chicago PD is a great show. Like, we were watching it today, and the season premiere was the other night. I think it was Thursday or Wednesday night. So we watched it. We watched it yesterday. I almost never watch TV in bed. Like, I almost never do that. And I watched it in bed the other night, and it was really good. And so I said to my wife, you know, we need to go back and watch season one because there's a bunch of storylines that are updating and that run through the five seasons. And I really, really like that. I love that series. Like, I never thought I'd like it. Like, and I only started watching it, and this is what makes Dick Wolf. Like, you can't just say, hey, Dick Wolf's shows are great. You have to say Dick Wolf.
Yeah, he's a mythical creature at this point.
Yeah, like, well, Dick's Wolf is mythical. Anyway, the point is, I only started watching Chicago PD because of the crossover they did with Law & Order SVU, which I'm a huge fan of as well.
Yeah.
And so there have been a bunch of guys on that Chicago PD show that I have seen. Like, Hank Voigt, the main character on Chicago PD, was a big part of the SVU crossover, as was Erin Lindsay, who is, her real name is Sophia Bush.
She's fine.
She's not on the show anymore. Yeah, she's...
Come
she,
on!
Yeah, she's not
Help
on the
me.
Show anymore. But that's what happened. Like, I watched the season six premiere, and hello, the hot Bush wasn't on the show anymore. So I was like, what the hell? But like Burgess and Halstead and like all of these guys, these great performances, like Ruzek, I think has really grown. I watched season one, episode one, and it turns out Ruzek got on the show. They plucked him out of the academy to do a drug buy. I would have had no idea. So now I'm back at season one and I'm trying to go through the seasons so that I fully understand the storylines. But Chicago PD has really grown on me.
Nice.
I'm excited about that. You know what I'm saying? You don't like Chicago PD?
I made progress on my insurance today.
You did? What happened?
So my guy over at Penske's working for me. I made a connection, you know, did my thing.
Yeah.
He's actually, you know how I had that hood issue where they weren't going to give me a new hood?
Yeah.
He slid in the new hood kind of in an off category, and it got by the insurance.
Really?
So I might be getting a new hood.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Way to go, dude. We'll have to fully update that on Monday.
Yeah.
Jake likes to cold start his car outside of people's bedroom windows because he's catless. That's Jake, and he's a dick. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.